Mr. Cameron, Reel 15. Now, you were telling me the story of how you got the stick the first time with in Salonika.
Well, like I said, I'd collected my white sash. Well, it wasn't a sash, and then a belt with a little pouch and a swagger cane. I was coming out on a message about an hour after the guard mounting had been cleared, and the RSM was coming in. Come here, Cameron. Off I went to him. And he said, "Sir, do you know how you got to sit?" "No, sir." "By the hair of your head." "I got a haircut like this, you see." Which was enormous. That was a thing to do. I'd done that from the beginning. Always kept my hair short. Still is today. And I have done it. Not only have I, but it's always been that way and liked it. And at least said, "By the hair of your head, you know." I said, "Yes, sir." But he inquired of one or two, he said, "It was about me," and he said, "You're from..." Oh, I can remember, he said, "Weren't you at Otley?" That was a place. "Weren't you at Otley?" "No, sir." "No." "Oh." He said, "You don't know me." He did a conversation like that. I had never met him before. But apparently, he had been Camp RSM at Otley, where a whole lot of the demobs in 45, 46, and so on, and also prisoners returning, they'd gone to there before going on demob. And so you met a lot of villains coming from all over the world, as Camp RSM would offer. And he seemed to think I could have been one of those, which I never had been at all, being with the 16th. He was inquiring my background anyway, where I'd come from, and why I'd come from the option book, how I came to be a devil. And this didn't happen at the time, it happened later, when I was sergeant myself. He was inquiring, he was talking to me, and he looked at the medals, and he said, "Sergeant Cameron, why don't you wear the defence medal?" Says, "I'm not entitled to it, sir." "You're not entitled to it." Now, little Harry had the defence medal and the end of war medal. And it was a thing with him. You know what I mean? All these blokes on anything, they all had a string of medals, ex-overseas, all of them, soldiers. He must have spent the most of his war years in England in charge of these camps. Which is no detriment to Harry. He was a good little soldier. He must have been, I don't know his particular history, but he must have been a pre-war senior NCO to get to where he was during the war. And he was stuck with somebody, a job somebody had to do. Anyway, he couldn't understand. I didn't have a defence medal, and most of the others did. Anyway, I wasn't entitled to it, although I'd been in the Battle of Britain. The qualifications for the defence medal, you had to do 6 months overseas in a non-combatant area, 3 years in UK, yeah, 3 years in UK in the forces, and that included everyone, of course, the army, crews, fires and that. And I did about 2 years and 9 months, if that, in England, and the rest of my war service was overseas, but I never did 6 months in a non-combatant area, so I was never entitled to it. Because I applied for it and was turned down. But anyway, yeah, well,
we were talking about the stick. Did you ever manage to get it 3 times?
No, I didn't stay a private long enough. But this was a thing, I got it once as a private soldier. I wasn't a private soldier very long when I went there. I'd only been, what, maybe 3 weeks with them when I got the stick, by the time I got myself to standard to compete with them. But I'd had a look round the camp by then, you see, and walked around, and I went down to the support company lines, folk around. We've got to know the layout of the camp and such on. And we used to go out in the night time, me and Topsy Turner, the old ex-Navy man, we'd go out and have a drink in the Tavernas, a drink like senior. But we always went the opposite way to the mainland. They went into Salamanca. Now we would go the other way, into one of the villages. We'd get cheaper beer, cheaper wine anyway, there was no beer to get. But and it was more, we didn't get many trouble with anything. The village just left us alone, we left them alone. But I got to know the camp layout. And I went down to through support company lines. I was walking around and I spotted these anti-tank guns, 6 pound anti-tank guns, standing behind the S company lines. And I already knew, like, they had a carrier platoon, they had a mortar platoon, a salt pioneer platoon, and an anti-tank platoon. Of course, I hadn't been there very long and didn't know a great deal about them, but when I spotted the guns, I went and I looked them under the canvas covers and such.
Is that your old artillery interest coming out?
That's it, I was a gunner from way back, and I've been a gunner for a while. I poked around, and of course, this was in the evening, nobody knocking around, and I could see the state they were in, they were a right bloody mess.
In what way?
Well, they were neglected, as they were. Even the area, I think it was, there was four 6 pound guns standing in line. They weren't even lined up or anything, which when you park guns up, you line them up. So I thought, that's for me, I'm better off. I would never say I was a good rifle company man. I wasn't an infantryman as such. I was in between, half artillery, half infantry. And when I saw these guns, I knew I could occupy myself better working with the guns than just doing infantry work and working with the rifle and as a one of a section. So it must have been the same days I had the stick, in fact, because I can remember. It was Company Sergeant Major Whitnam, so it must have been B Company. Coming out of B Company lines and heading back to HQ Company where the wait with my little swagger came and the slash thing again. Sergeant Major Whitnam was talking to this other Sergeant Major in the middle of the playground. He was standing talking there and spotted me. Cameron, of course, doubled across, double attention, sir. He says to the other sergeant major, this is the fella I'm telling you about. He's been an artilleryman. Of course, the other sergeant major said, is that right? Yeah, says he. Now, I'd already seen Wit, as it happened. I said, do you think there's any chance of me getting a transfer to the anti-tank platoon? Because I knew I'd already told him a bit of my background once I saw the guns. So he was doing it. For the new Sergeant Major, it was Joe Dubois, was it happened, Sergeant Major Dobson. He wanted to know the gun experience and such. I told him, and then he says, oh, yeah, he says, you've been an NCO. He says, yes, I've been Lance Sergeant at the charge of a gun in the artillery. Oh. Right, we'll say to it. Of course, when I got back that night into the big company lines, in fact, your kid didn't report to support company. Off I went to support company. Anti-tank platoon.
What gun were they using then? What gun was it? Still a 6 pound. And how did you set about? I mean, were you able to make an impact straight away?
Well, the platoon wasn't up to strength for a start. There was, I'd say there were about 6 short in the strength of the platoon. And they didn't seem to have a great deal of organisation. But this was when I got in the first. They were billeted in stables. Well, they were cleaned out, of course, but they had been stables. And
you're sleeping there on the floor with your sheet, your blankets and such. And it was reasonably clean, but they had green stables, and the guns were parked on the back. And gets in there with those lines of a corporal, big rusty bloke, and a couple of lance corporals, I think. Said, right, you run down there, you know, in one of the awkward spots in the stables. Push my gear down, and nobody mixing with them. It's the same as going in any other place. But when we went on parade the next morning, of course, I'm the new lad, and Sergeant Overingham, platoon sergeant, he was ex-buffs. He was the ex-buffs, so he must have been given a tip or something about me, I don't know, but he says, come and have a look through here with these with me. And now, what about this? And so, of course, I'm telling him, I said, well, all these want a damn good clean up.
You were looking at the guns, I said, Splendor.
He says, everything wants cleaning up. I says, have you got a PSR brush? So, what's that? This is a platoon sergeant, you know. I said, well, same as your pulse for your rifle. Have you got any gear for the clean with? Have you any tools? Oh, sure, we've got some tools. And he set the others on cleaning the guns. He says, come with me and have a look and see what we've got. And he took me to the carrier platoon lines. They were more or less in garages with the carriers and such. And in one corner, one of their garages, they had a chest. Three foot six by two foot six and about two foot six high, with a lid on. And he opens the lid and hears this jumble of bloody tools and knows what, you know. And then he looks, he says, this is what I've got. Now, not his fault, he was a rifle platoon sergeant. And he had never done any gunnery or gun training or anything. It was there. I think it was a neglected thing. The war was finished. No one was really bothered about anti-tank guns because they knew they'd hardly ever, no chance of ever using them. So they were neglected. But anyway, I looked in his pocket. And he picked something up. Said, what's this? He said, oh, that's tool so-and-so for so-and-so. There was I didn't forget them myself now, you know, but then I would look at them and say straight away, oh, that's tool had just run out, you know, tool removing primer, number so and so. I'd pick them out. But the first thing I picked out was he had a roll of 42, and wrapped in it, he had four primers for the shells themselves. Now they are high explosive, really bloody high explosive, you know. They're just wrapped up in amongst all these tools. This is the first thing you want, is those out. They should be in the RSM's bloody cage there where he has all the ammunition in that, because he had one somewhere with a barbed wire in that roundabout. So they want to go out for a start. So if you blow your bloody hands off, one of those drops, so you handle it, they bump something. I just forget what was in them now. I could quote all the explosives at one time, but they were dangerous. That was the charge itself for firing the inside charge. Anyway, he carted it. Later on, of course, he carted them off of the RSM to get disposed of. I sorted all the tools out for him. And we took a few back, and I was going around doing the various jobs and showing him what this tool does and what that tool does. He says, really, you want to make out the task sheet and have these routines done daily. He said, oh, yeah, of course. You know, so that was our old routine. I knew that. He said, I'll see about doing that. So I said to with the guns. He says, give him the hand with that and move on. And fair enough. And there was a lance corporal there with the guns. I says to him, let's have a go with testing the run out with the guns. He says, how will we go about that? She says, yeah, I took the guard rope with the wrapped around the front of the gun, you know. Of course, all the lads is watching me. Gets the guard rope on, hangs it on the back of the breech. She says, right, get hold and tug. They all hung onto the rope, gives it a tug back that pulled the whole battle back. She says, right, let go. He let go and boom. She says, now that bugger wants adjusting. I said, no, this is a tool, this is the tool adjusting run out. Little valve underneath the breech, showed them how to do it. Give it another go. So, pulled it out, let it run up again. By then, all the platoon's watching, you see. So, yeah. I was adjusting it two or three times. Well, they'd been stood that long that they all wanted adjustment. If they had been fired, it would have lifted the bloody gun in the air. So, look. Now that's a thing that should have been checked daily, you see. Anyway, I says, what about your firing mechanism? I said, your breech, how does your breech work? Well, when you got hold of the handle, you know. He said, well, hang on. I said, put it and turn it on. He said, no, put it so that the bottle will operate it. And I shut the breech, fasten it up. I pull it out again. Now, as they pulled the barrel out, it opened the breech, which was a normal practice. As a recoil, if it had been fired, the barrel would have come back. The breech would have flung open, and it would have thrown the empty cartridge case out, which I knew this, of course. But it was also a way of testing your breech mechanism, making sure it worked. So the definition had them all like that. You know, they would have won a lot. Sergeant had come back and was watching. Well, I'd done a lot of this and I worked with the sergeant.
So what you're saying basically is the anti-tank platoon hadn't got the slightest clue of how to use the guns. Had they ever fired them?
They hadn't, as it happened. The guns, as far as I know, the guns hadn't been fired.
So they were, they'd just been assigned to that platoon, as far as you could see, and they knew nothing.
Anyway, Sergeant Oldham inquired all about me. We had a good chat and everything. I told him I'd been NC. Well, he knew. He said, we NC all yourself, haven't you? You know, yeah. Lance Sergeant in the artillery. Oh, yeah. Anyway, within a month, I was Lance Corporal. In the anti-tank platoon, and I was more or less doing Sergeant Oldham's job with him, of course, but he was due for demo. Now there was a corporal in the platoon as well, Corporal Roy, big Jody Roy, but he again was a rifleman. He wasn't an anti-tank platoon man. He resented it, but it didn't do nothing about it, which was only natural. I was a He was a senior corporal in a platoon and standing in line for promotion to sergeant when Oldham went on leave, went on demo. But he didn't get it. I was promoted Lance Corporal in a month. In another month, I was promoted corporal. So I was same as Jody then. And then in another 2 months, Sergeant Oldham went on demo. And I was my platoon sergeant. So within 4 months, practically, of joining the Durhams, I was platoon sergeant of the anti-tank platoon. And that's more or less stayed at as anti-tank platoon sergeant till I finished with the Durhams. There was in-betweens where I did other things.
Did you get them working properly and get proper firing tests and things like that?
Yeah, there was so much to do. It was so easy to make an impression with it. I had various platoon commanders and a set two in the little office that they fixed up and arranged training schedules for different types of training with the guns. I read up about them myself because I had nothing to do with six farmers before. I'd been mainly
and the aircraft artillery, but all guns are basically the same. So I read up the training routine, some of the manuals out, and things like that, and made maintenance sheets out and such, and I arranged crews for the different guns, 1, 2, 3, 4 gun numbered them, put a sheet up, your number one team, number two team, so on. Your corporal in charge of this gun, so on. And they've got them all back in line again. They've got the guns cleaned up, but they never handled them. But I used to give them gun drill. I'd drill them and drill them and drill them, and you would hear us all over the camp, you know. When they especially after being there a while, I can't say how long it would be, but I was sent on a 6-pounder training course to England. So I'd never done 6-pounders myself, but basic gunnery I was okay. But I went on about a 3 weeks course somewhere in England, small arms school, but it wasn't high. It was more a bit of a heavy weapons place. Anyway, it took me about a week to get home, fortnight or 3 weeks training, a week's leave, and back again. Well, just one look at that and knowing the training types and the way to go about it, it helped me a hell of a lot. And I knew what pamphlets to look for and what books to look for. I found that out on the training course. So it made all the difference when I got back. It was straightforward work. I could organise it. And there wasn't another gunner in amongst them. That was the big advantage.
So they weren't bad lads, they just had no idea.
The lads, they just never, no one had the capability of making gunners out of them.
How did you fit into the sergeant's mess?
Quite well, as it happened. Mind, like I say, I've been a sergeant before, and I haven't been there long, like I say, about 4 months. I'd gotten to know one or two of them, walking around and so on, but when I moved in there, there was one thing, it was different to my old Royal Artillery Sergeant's Mess, in that the bulk of these were pre-war soldiers, and they were used to the etiquette of the pre-war army, as you might say.
In what way? What type of etiquette?
Well, it's hard to explain. The sergeant's mess here wasn't the same as going in the men's canteen. You know, you took your hat and your belt off and hung them up, and you went in there properly dressed and so on. And although there was no shop talk and so on, you didn't fall out with each other. You know, there was somebody saying, "Now, you know, be quiet." Of course, you got the upsets, but it was proper sort of pre-war army routine.
Did you enjoy that side of things, the regular, the bull, and all that?
When I got used to it, I thought it was a better way than the way we were. It was setting an example. Put it that way. You were setting an example all the while to the youngsters. And you learned to be reasonable to yourself. You wanted to be a decent soldier, and you had to behave as a decent soldier. Difficult to explain, but that was it.
Now, in January 49, you were posted to Germany, and you had to spend the rest of your time in Germany, weren't you? To Dortmund.
We came from Salonika. We spent 6 months in just out of Bath City, Almondbury place. 6 months there, and that's when the band joined us there. We got the band. No, it was the band sergeant major. We already had the band with us. The bugles, anyway. We had a bugle section with us all the while. But when we got to England, the band came and joined us. So we had band and bugles. We did 6 months there, and we went out to Dortmund in Germany.
And there, by the way, we hadn't any funds or anything with us. When we got to Dortmund in Germany, I took over, no, it was later on, I took over £6. But to go back on the story, when before leaving Greece, we handed in the £6. And of course, I was without a job then, I was out of work. There was the disbanded of the team. And I was made Sergeant Mess Caterer. I was a spare bomb for a while then. Now, Sergeant Mess Caterer, when we landed in England, and
so that would be in 1948 you landed in England?
Beginning of 49. Yeah, back in the 48 or something. Yeah, back in the 48. And I took over Sergeant Mess Caterer in Bath. I stayed Sergeant Mess Caterer until we got to Germany. And I had to reform the anti-tank platoon. And that was a job I didn't like. And because I was more or less like running a pub or a club, you might say, but in a lot of ways different, because I had to stay in most nights, got the odd night off. I had to stay in most nights in cases of odd ones who had been on duty called in back into the sergeant's mess and they wanted to serve them. But the bulk of them, as soon as parades were finished on the evening, they disappeared into town or into the villages, in the local pubs, you see. Of course, the pubs closed at 10 o'clock and that's when my place opened. They all flocked back to the sergeant's mess and then I was stuck there until they decided that they'd had enough. Or unless one of the senior sergeant majors says, right, give them a break. Let's close it, mess. And
was there much hard drinking? Was there much hard drinking?
Always hard drinking. If you wanted to learn to drink, you would drink in the 1st Battalion, Dillonite, Infantry Sergeant's Mess. I've not touched much on that from all the while, but in Greece, we used to have some hellish parties, you know. And of course, it was spirits, although I didn't touch them. There was a lot of spirits. We had the HMI next door to us in Greece. We used to mix with each other, you know, HMI come to our mess, we walked off to theirs, and then it always finished up in a fight, so, but we made friends and did it again. But when we came into England, there was no one near us, we were stuck more or less in the wires, and they disappeared, and they must have shifted some gear in the pubs. Now there again, I had a little mate then, they called him Doug, Sergeant Doug. And me and him, he was about the same height as me. Me and him used to go out together. And we used to go the opposite way. They always went along into the big village. We went down the hill, a 3-in-1 hill, to a little pub that stood on its own. We used to go down there and play crib. And we used to drink Guinness in Worthington. It's a little bottle of Guinness, little bottle of Worthington, and a pint glass. And the locals used to look at us, really gone out, but it was what we were used to.
Did the hard drinking ever affect people's ability to get up next morning and do their duty?
Very rarely, very rarely. And I don't remember anyone ever being in trouble on account of it. No, it was a system that you learned to live with.